Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about vasculature and potential problems. We touched on this last week. Vascular and lymphatic disorders. Okay. One obvious vascular disorder is blood pressure. Right? We certainly have talked about that quite a bit. And please remember that blood pressure is caused by increased pressure on the vessel walls. Very simple, correct? The other thing it can be caused by is vessel walls. But that increase in pressure could be caused by an increase in volume in blood, right? That would cause increased pressure. Also, that would be cardiac. Sorry, my yawn. You know, it's just really amazing that if you don't put all these things in, they don't listen to me. Sure. The computers are very smart things. Okay, this can, of course, be caused by increased cardiac output. If the heart's pumping more, right, it's going to pump more pressure, more blood through the vessels, thereby creating more pressure, right, on the inside of the vessels, on the lumen, right? Okay, if you simply have more blood, that's going to create more pressure, okay? If you have vascular resistance, now what would be an example of resistance in the vessel that we've talked about last week? Atherosclerosis, perfect. If you have any kind of atherosclerosis, if you have plaque formation within the vessels, it's going to narrow the lumen, right? Narrow lumen with the same amount of blood, you're going to get high blood pressure, correct? Got it? What about hardening of the arteries too, right? Stenosis, okay? It's not going to be elastic. It's not going to press open. You're going to have more pressure. So actually, lots of things can then cause an elevation in blood pressure, as well as your sympathetic nervous system. My blood pressure, every time I get upset, my blood pressure goes right up. Some of us are very sensitive, you know, to physical changes with stress. And blood pressure is a very common example of an example where hormones and our sympathetic nervous system kicks in and blood pressure goes up, right? That controls the volume. So it's all about, think about just blood flowing through the vessels, okay? And what's going to make the pressure on the walls greater? Right? It could be your hormones forcing more blood through because you're nervous and you think you're going to need that blood for some terrible crisis in the body, which is generally not true. Or it could be the problems with the vessels we talked about, or it could be a heart, cardiac condition, or blood volume. So we said sympathetic nervous system, norepinephrine and epinephrine, right? What happens when you think you're going to hit the car in front of you? Okay, you get an epinephrine surge, right? Your adrenaline surge. What do your vessels do? They constrict, right? They constrict in your periphery, sending everything, all the available blood to the organ so that you'll survive. Right? So what's happened to the blood pressure? It goes up. Angiotensin II, vasopressin are other ones, aldosterone, ADH, and also sodium and water retention. This all plays into blood pressure. So here's a really nice figure from your book that you can take a look at. It kind of looks at all the different factors that affect and have to do with blood pressure, cardiac output, blood volume. Myocardial contractibility, we haven't talked about that. How healthy is the heart? Can the heart muscle contract well? If it's not contracting much, it's going to decrease the blood volume, right? So you're going to have less cardiac output, so you're going to lower the blood pressure. Conversely, okay, if it's not, right? Vessel diameter, vessel compliance, muscle tone, all this. primary hypertension, we touched on this last week. Primary hypertension is of unknown cause, meaning it's the diagnosis, primary hypertension. It's not hypertension secondary to high blood volume, because it's hypervolemia, or it's not secondary to atherosclerosis. Okay, it exists on its own, and we really don't know why. Okay, commonly this is a stress reaction, possibly. Don't know. But the majority of diagnoses for hypertension is primary. We don't have an exact reason why this person has hypertension. Usually it's asymptomatic. Systolic blood pressure under what, 140? We're not concerned. We start getting concerned, what, at 130 systolic, is that correct? Is that what your text says? I believe that's about right. Systolic BP of 130, we're thinking. 40, at 40, we sometimes, 140, we sometimes start medicating. 150, we're definitely medicating, okay, to bring it down. But initially, it's asymptomatic. A headache. Why would there be a headache if in hypertension? What are your thoughts? Exactly, yeah. It's a vascular headache. You have pressure on the vessels, pressing on the nerves in your head. Really not unlike a migraine, okay, or any other kind of vascular headache. Nocturia, you know what that is, okay? Nausea, vomiting, visual disturbances, again, having to do with that pressure in the head, pressing on nerves from the expanding vessels. So you may see some or all these signs as someone comes in with particularly high blood pressure, say 200 over 120. My patient that I had been caring for that died a couple weeks ago, he eventually died of a hypertensive crisis. Okay. Through the ALS, one of the things that happened to him was he lost the ability to control his blood pressure. That he wasn't sending any signals to the brain; he couldn't control it. At one point, I was giving him massive amounts of hypotensive medication to bring down the blood pressure. I gave him enough that would have killed any one of us. I remember one day, I just kept pushing it. Yeah, finally it kicked in. They lived, and that was like 2 days before he died. What eventually killed him was his inability to control the blood pressure, which I didn't really know was a symptom of ALS. But apparently, in stage ALS, you lose that ability. So, although he died of complications from ALS, I know that what really happened is his blood pressure spiked really fast, and our guess is that then what probably killed him. We're all just guessing. We're not going to do an autopsy. He was having these hypertensive, storms. Okay, well, he'd just get these amazing bouts of hypertension. It was the highest blood pressure I'd ever taken. I had to throw away the machine and just do it manually, and I got 320 over 180. Never seen such a thing. And I texted the doc. I remember texting him. I said, how high of a blood pressure can a body sustain? He never texted me back.
He never
texted me. Should have been dead was kind of the answer, because we had plugged all this. I had pushed all these meds. Thank goodness, shortly after that, he started coming around, started going down. The next day, he decided to go ahead and let himself die. I mean, he basically decided that we weren't going to fight. He wasn't going to fight his disease anymore. So at that point, the nurses weren't being so, I instructed them not to be so hypervigilant. Because you can imagine me, you know, I'm taking that blood pressure like every half hour. I'm watching like a hawk, you know, any redness in his face at all, I'm there. So I was on it, so I was able to. And he was still responding somewhat to the meds enough to save him. But then when he decided that, no, he really wanted to go ahead and die, we had planned to disconnect the respirator on a Monday. Okay, it was going to do my job. All right, that is a nursing task. Generally, the physician gives the order for morphine, Ativan, and then the nurse is the one who disconnects the ventilator. And so I was kind of planning that for Monday. Right? And I had a colleague coming in, and she was going to be with me, so it was going to be two of us. I felt legally we needed two nurses. I was more comfortable with that. And the wife said, would you like another nurse? Because I wanted someone there with me. So we were going to do that on Monday. But on Thursday night, we weren't watching as closely, as I said. When they did change the shift at 7, the nurses reported to me that everything was fine. It was fine, but he was showing some early signs of going into one of these crises. His temperatures would go up and start perspiring, but we didn't treat because we weren't going to be on it as much because we knew that Monday he had decided to go ahead and disconnect. That was our plan. So he visited with his family that evening, and they walked out of the room, and he had a hypertension, one of these huge spikes. And what do you think happened to him? How did he die then? Right, and if he had been a younger person or someone with a less strong heart, that would be a very good guess. No, in fact, this man's heart was very strong. It was not his heart. His heart was fine. What else would have killed him? Yeah. Where do you think? We're thinking of brain bleed, real fast, a stroke, really fast. Okay. And with that kind of pressure, you know, you lose consciousness immediately. With that kind of pressure. So yeah, and the vessels in the brain are commonly ones that do go. So I don't believe there was an aneurysm. I think it was just he just had a really quick stroke. And that's what finally killed him. Although, if you look at any of his death stuff, it says complications of ALS. Yeah. So that was interesting. And it was a very interesting exercise on blood pressure for me, because I had no idea how high it could go. I had never seen a systolic over 300. And it was really, that's way in the red line if you're using your little dial thing. Way, and the machine wouldn't even deal with it. You know, 120 systolic, the machine just like, out of range, won't deal. So that was fascinating. That was my little story. But he never experienced any of this. It went that fast. It spiked, he bled out, and it was seconds and he was dead. I mean, really, which is not too bad if you're an end-stage ALS patient, right? I mean, that was really kind of a lovely death for this gentleman. And it was just fine. They called me, I came over, and we had champagne and chocolate until about 3 in the morning. And I called the mortuary. They came in a little white van, and that was it. The family flew to Hawaii last weekend for his ceremony. We did call in a physician. And the physician, the mortuary wanted a physician to substantiate the death. So the physician walks in, stands at the foot of the bed and goes, yeah. Walks out. No, that was a plan. So we did call the physician that had been caring for him. And he came. And we sat around and had champagne and chocolate. And toasted this man's great life. It was very interesting. That's a great question. Because there are times when a hospice nurse, if this man had been under hospice, a hospice nurse would have in the home. That's more commonly the way it goes. Okay. In the hospital, of course, it would have been an attending physician, or it could have been a nurse as well, if the nurse was a house supervisor and there were no physicians. Sure. Well, he turned to the nurse and said, what time did he die? I mean, he was there at like 10:30 and he died at 9:45. Actually, he was probably closer to 11, the physician, by the time we called him. So yeah, the doc arrived about 11, and I got there about 10:15. I got there real quick, and nobody. And I called the physician, so it had to be closer to 11. And the agent said what time. And I thought physician pronounced it by just oh yeah. It's really obvious most of the time. I mean, by that time, when I saw him after half an hour after being dead, it was. Extremely obvious. He was about the color of Victoria's shirt, you know. There's no color left. Because the blood's gone. Skin without blood doesn't have all the color. So, but he never had it. My point was, he never had any of these problems. And actually, his hypertension was primary. We honestly didn't know what was causing these amazing spikes. And these, we called them... hypertensive storms. So part of his regulation was way off. And that was one more thing that his body could no longer control through the course of this disease. It's very interesting. But normally it's not that high. Normally it doesn't cause death because we control it, right? But the complications of long-term primary hypertension, living with high blood pressure, certainly can be cardiovascular, a lot of strain on the heart. As you mentioned, yeah, did he die from heart? No. But he sure could have had he been had a weaker heart. Neurological problems, renal system problems, yeah. High blood pressure can cause long-term renal issues. And also, renal problems can cause hypertension, right? If we're not filtering through the urine, we have a higher volume in the blood, therefore an increased pressure right on the veins causing hypertension. Kidney disease. So secondary would be there's an underlying cause, secondary to kidney disease. A coarcation of the aorta, that's a deformity in the vascular system in the heart, yeah. Endocrine disorders, neurological disorders, drug use. Okay? Pregnancy. Sure. Hypertensive crisis. It's known as malignant hypertension. It's a rapid elevation in blood pressure, like my patient. And my patient was like an extreme case. I've never seen so much, such a rapid. I've never seen anybody storm like he did. It was just amazing. Very rapid. Normally, we can get treatment with 1 hour. Within 1 hour, we can prevent complications and death, generally. And my story was absolutely extreme. I'm sure that's very much a rarity. Headache, confusion. Papilledema. What's that? Little ruptured blood vessels in the chest. Petechiae. Okay. And you see anybody that... I had a girlfriend... She had 3 children, and every day, she's very fair. Every time she gave birth, she came back with all these little red dots all over her face. Valsalva maneuver, right? To push that baby out, she'd just push down, and she'd rupture all the blood vessels in her face. And she was so thin-skinned, it would show. So that's, you get it with a hypertensive crisis as well. Blurred vision, restlessness, motor and sensory deficits. Okay. What about enlarged lymph nodes? Lymphadenopathy. Enlarged lymph nodes. Again, this can be generally secondary, right? Enlarged lymph nodes are generally secondary to an infection. It can be localized, and it's a result of the inflammatory process. But you can also have an inflammation caused by the lymph vessels themselves. Right, and you can get red streaks that if you have the lymph vessels themselves have an infection. Not just they're responding to an infection, but they themselves are infected. You can get red streaks at the arms. Lymphedema. Anybody know anything about lymphedema? I did a lot of my graduate work in lymphedema. Primary lymphedema is uncommon, it's genetic. It's when someone doesn't have enough lymph vasculature. They simply are deficient in the lymph system. It happens in extremities. So what happens is the extremities become swollen because the lymph can get there but not come back. So you have lymphedema, a swelling of the lymph vessels because there's lymph there that can't come back up. Lymphedema. The secondary lymphedema is much more common. And does anybody have any idea where we commonly see this? Why don't we take blood pressures on the same arm that a woman had a mastectomy, the same side of the body where a woman had a mastectomy? You were told not to do that, but were you ever told why? Yeah, they're susceptible to lymphedema. Okay? Yes, commonly during a mastectomy, lymph nodes are removed. If they're not removed, they're often damaged from radiation or from surgery. So that woman is very likely to have some deficit in the lymph system on that side of the body. It's not at all uncommon. And so when they do, if there's an infection, even a thorn, the slightest thing, a hangnail, you're gonna, the body's gonna send lymph down that arm, but there's no vascular system to get it back. So it swells. All right? So watch out for that. And we don't want to do anything that would bother that lymph system in that arm at all, like blood pressure, like sticks, like anything. Anything, because they're so highly susceptible to lymphedema, which is simply a swelling. But the problem is, it's very difficult to then get that lymph back into circulation. So women live for years, decades with swollen arms after treatment for mastectomies with a, then an infection is generally the sequela. Aneurysm, remember we talked about an aneurysm? A dilation of a blood vessel, we talked about that, a weakness in the vessel wall. Hypertension is a major contributing cause, and this makes sense, doesn't it? If you have an increased pressure, a weakness in the wall is more likely going to form an aneurysm. And dissection is when a section of the vessel has an aneurysm. Okay, so it doesn't go all the way out, it's just a part of it, one of the layers of the vessel. Okay, so it's still encapsulated. I think I have a picture of that. Okay, we can have thoracic or aneurysms. We talked about this when we talked about blood. We talked about aortic aneurysms, abdominal aortic aneurysms, right? We talked about the association with atherosclerosis. Certainly, someone with hypertension is going to be more susceptible to this, more at risk, right? Can be asymptomatic, yeah, but they can present with abdominal mass. I can actually feel a pulsing mass sometimes, or like when I heard that swish, that was a rupture. And sometimes in the mid-abdominal region or even the back. Okay? Thrombi can cause embolisms, right? So the piece breaks off, ruptures, hemorrhage, and can lead to sudden death. All complications of high blood pressure. You have papatia, you have femoral aneurysms. What else? Here's some popliteal aneurysms. You can look at this in your text. Kind of cool. Here's a dissection, as we talked about, where the vessel wall, there's a split in the wall. So the outside of the vessel is still the same, but there's blood leaking into the layers of the vessel, between the layers. Okay, so think you have a sandwich and you put a big tomato in it, just like this. Okay? Same idea. But it's inside the vessel wall. Not just at the very outside, like a normal aneurysm, it's further in. And there's a couple different types. Everything you would expect, pain, syncope, weakness, absence of pulse, with an aortic dissection. Okay. What else? There's a nice picture, a tear, it's a tear. Let's talk about peripheral vascular disease. This is something you're going to see a lot. You see it in diabetic patients. Right? You see it in elderly. You see it in anybody with poor blood flow, narrow peripheral arteries. This is an arterial problem. Okay? So therefore, blood flow supply is impaired to the peripheral tissues. So how are they going to present? They're going to have cold hands, right? Blue, cold. Diminish your absent pulses, correct? Because it's arterial, the blood's not getting there. Cramping. Why would you have cramping or aching in the calves of the legs? Why is that? Excellent. Lack of oxygen, making the cells do anaerobic respiration, making them build up of lactic acids, causing the pain. Perfect. You thought all that, right? Good. Exactly, okay? Pain during inactivity. Increase with elevation, which is interesting. Okay, pain increases when legs are dependent, you know, when legs are hanging down. Skin is shiny, hairless, discolored. Toenails are thickened. Areas of skin break down. Can be some edema. Gangrene is a complication. This is your diabetic patient that gets his toe amputated. Okay. His gangrene sets in. Okay. You can have a rupture of an aortic aneurysm, you can have infection, sepsis, all these kind of problems with peripheral vascular disease. And then there's Raynaud's disease. Okay? This is episodes of vasospasms in small arteries or arterioles. We don't know the cause. Can occur secondary to another disease, and there is a great picture of that coming up. There you go. Oh, no, go back. Okay. So cyanosis, because of the arteries are won't allow the blood to flow down. Interesting, huh? And there can be an acute arterial occlusion by a thrombus or embolism, like we've been talking about today. And that is an emergency, obviously. Can be. And there's venous thrombosis, blood clot. Talked about that, too. And all how those are caused. So venous condition. Okay, so the blood's not going to get back up, right? Not going to move. This is the most common site of a DVT, extending from the calf to the iliac veins. So no blood's going to come up. It's another common location. Greater saphenous vein, just this one, maybe. It's a little different than chronic venous insufficiency. Now this is a Walmart lady that we talked about last time, where inadequate venous return over a long period of time. Common cause is deep vein thrombosis. Venous stasis occurs, impairing arterial circulation. So eventually the blood can't get back up enough to even get it to go around again. Okay, here's an example of an ulcer. Discoloration, okay. Venous stasis ulcer. Some edema, redness. What about varicose veins? Anybody know anything about them? Any mothers have them? Aunts? Grandmothers? Yeah? Yeah, Jessica's going, yeah?
Yeah, my mom had
them,
and she got
them. Did she? And she feels much better about it now, huh? Then they tend to be hereditary, you know? Yeah, so you're someone that would want to start wearing compression stockings right now. Absolutely. Is she a nurse?
Yeah.
Yeah? So does she stand?
Yeah, she's standing.
Yeah, that's a big problem. Yeah, standing. Okay, Spirica, so tell us about your mom's veins. Well, those are spider veins.
Yeah.
Those aren't varicose veins. Those are little spider veins. So now you can stop worrying. Okay. Anybody who scans much is going to end up with some of those spider veins. Yeah, that's not a true varicose vein. Jessica has a story about varicose veins, do you? Spider veins too? Yeah, you think? Yes. Good. Now we got a real varicose vein. Let's hear about it. Yeah, unlike the little spider veins, varicose veins are gross.
Yeah.
And they stick out, right? You can actually see them. Okay, they're irregular, tortuous veins with incomplete valves. Incompetent valves. The valves don't work. Okay? There's an inability to move the blood back because the valves are flabby, non-functional, and it is hereditary. So please start today wearing your stockings, okay? Very common in pregnancy. Did you know your mom through any pregnancies that you remember? Yeah, commonly people are predisposed, and then a pregnancy puts them over the edge. Why would a pregnancy? More blood flow. Just an increased blood flow, possibly hypertension, but what else? Weight, yeah, I imagine your mom's a pretty small lady, right? Yeah, so I mean, that's for a little lady. Her mom's going to carry the same size baby I am, now in a body that probably starts about here, right? With a lot more stress on her body. So certainly, right? Little ladies, it's hard. Right, so, varicose veins are not unusual. Right. Commonly in the lower extremities, and exactly as you say. Okay, so what have I got for you now? I do so. Nothing. No. Nothing. No. We're going to do something fun.